Oh, good. Okay.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. So I'm going to start off by reading a letter in the Buddha Dharma, this issue of Buddha Dharma. I think some of you get this magazine, do you?
Yes. Yes.
The magazine ran an article shortly after the tsunami by Robert Thurman. Did you read that magazine, that article? It really pissed me off. I find sometimes some people, when they identify very much with one school of Buddhism, they can sound quite arrogant.
Yeah.
Do you find that?
Yeah.
And then they start throwing terms around that actually they misuse. And then people pick that up and think that that's applicable, that's correct. Especially when you start talking about things like identity things, where you talk to somebody. I remember one time I went to there were some friends of mine now had a, and when I lived on Pender Island, we're into Wicca celebrations, and we were going to a spring Wicca celebration with fire and all that for lunch, and I picked up this friend of mine. And I was taking her, and she had a broken arm. And we got to this other person's home, we went in, and another person said to my friend, "Oh, what happened to you? Oh, you broke your arm." And another, and the person whose house it was at said, "Well, that's your karma." So you've heard me on this subject before.
Yes.
What do I say? Yes, that's what I say. And Thurman made some statements in his article, which this there is this beautiful letter by Chan Suchito, which I would like to read to you. I would like you to hear this letter, because I'm not sure all of you even read it carefully, because you tend to read these magazines like cornflakes, don't you? So he says, "I sympathize with any attempts to offer consolation for the recent tsunami catastrophe, including Robert Thurman's piece in the latest issue of Buddha Dharma, quote, 'The Consolation of Karma, Spring 2005, end quote. Personally, I doubt whether anyone coming to terms with the loss of life, family, and livelihood will be appeased by reflecting on the notion that," and here's a quote from Thurman's article, "they must have done something bad in a previous life for this to happen," end quote. Do you want me to read that again, or did you get that?
Got it.
"This might merely add guilt and depression to one's already overwhelming grief." Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
"Moreover, the sentiment that," quote, another quote from Robert Thurman's article, "anything bad that happens to you is a resonance of something bad that you perpetrated in a previous life," end quote, is not an accurate description or presentation of the Buddha's teaching on karma. You know, it's very straightforward. That is not the teaching on karma. You got that?
Yep.
I mean, I really hope you got that.
Yep.
Karma is what you are doing now. It's very clear. And then he's going to quote one of the Buddha's clearest statements of karma. So I'm getting to that. I just really want you to hear this. Isn't this beautiful? In the Samyutta Nikaya, which is called the Connected Discourses, number 36, verse 21, do look it up, get your own copy, inscribe it on your bedroom wall. It doesn't say all that either. The Buddha is reported as saying, this is so beautiful, and here we go. Some feelings arise based on phlegm, based on internal winds, based on an imbalance of bodily humors, from the change of the seasons, from uneven care of the body, from assaults, from the results of karma. That some feelings arise from the result of karma, one can know for oneself. No one else can tell you. The Buddha! I mean, he was pretty good, wasn't he? And everyone understands that to be true. And everybody knows that. You know that if you drop a brick and it hits your toe, that's a result of your action. It's not something you have to guess at. It's not something that because you have a feeling of guilt, therefore it must be true. It's because you clearly know. Yeah, well, I did steal my sister's shoes and put a pair of her old shoes there when she was going to the dance that night because I was pissed off that she was going with, you know, borrowed my dress without telling me. And so she didn't go. Instead, she came back. I ripped my dress to pieces. So I know that she ripped my dress because I did that. Is that clear? Do you hear that? It's very nice, isn't it? Because you know for yourself. You know for yourself. You don't have a feeling. No. Nice, huh? So I'm just going to repeat that sentence. That some feelings arise from the result of karma, one can know for oneself. And everyone understands that to be true. Everybody knows that that's true, that you do know for yourself. This action creates this result. When you dry the dishes, they're dry. Right? You know that for yourself. So any contemplatives or sages who are of the doctrine and view that whatever an individual feels, pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain, is entirely caused by what was done before, overstep what they themselves know. And what is agreed on by people in general. Therefore, I say that those contemplatives or sages are wrong. Isn't that beautiful? From this, carries on Achan Suchita, from this we could understand natural disasters, getting run over or mugged, etc., as coming under the heading of assaults. Those are assaults. However, although there is no specific connection between this life disaster and past life unskillfulness, there is the general reminder that if you hadn't been born, you wouldn't be suffering. You know, basically, life sucks. For all of us. Isn't that nice? I love it.
You didn't write it, did you?
No. He didn't say life sucks. So paraphrasing. So I'm going to repeat that. However, although there is no specific connection, you can't say this is happening to me because I did that in a previous lifetime. That's not true. Between this life disaster and past life unskillfulness, there is the general reminder that, quote, if you hadn't been born, then you wouldn't have had to experience this. Whatever this may be. This is a result of birth. Not your karma. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Thus, there is still the incitement for liberation to curtail a future birth in this danger zone. The whole place is dangerous. What can we do about it? And if that still sounds too righteous and finger-wagging, isn't he good? There is also the reminder that the Arahant only experiences physical pain. Now, a lot of people would like the Arahant to not experience any kind of pain. But if his tooth aches, it aches. But he doesn't immediately get into a mental and emotional state about it because he understands pain is pain. He understands sorrow is sorrow. He understands fear is fear. That's the difference. Not that he doesn't feel them, but he sees them as they are, not self, not I have this. The reminder that the Arahat only experiences physical pain, not mental grief, from the Samyutta on feeling, which is another incitement to practice in the here and now rather than lament over the past. Period. After all, look at all the people who didn't get hit by the tsunami. Don't tell me they were all innocent. Isn't that a beautiful letter?
Oh, yeah.
That letter is worth the whole issue. That is such a beautiful letter. Because when I read that article, I was like, my usual non-violent reaction.
I stopped partway through.
Yeah, I read the whole thing because I just wanted to see how bad he would get. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? If you look at some feelings arise based on phlegm. That means to see how, that means to say how the elements are balanced in your body, which is chemical, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How the chemicals in your body are balanced. In every age, human beings have used medicinal energies to balance the chemicals. Everyone. The Buddha used them. The Buddha administered drugs to monks who were sick. Did you know that?
No.
Well, it's true. Because our job as a conscious person is to try to practice kindness, and it starts here. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or not?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm asking you, Bonnie.
I think so.
So how can you practice kindness to this? Well, life already sucks. There is already dissatisfactoriness. Whatever you can do to create a better state for your being, emotionally, physically, and mentally, you do. Whatever you can't do, you use as a way for praying for compassion, not only for yourself, but for all beings, because now you know how they feel when they're in this circumstance. Ideally. Of course, some of the time, I just bitch. But ideally, the rest of the time, I work with that. It's a lot better when I'm not bitching. Because then I'm not adding pain to pain. If I am in a certain state of mind and I actually practice being aware that I'm not alone in it, already I'm more open, I'm less isolated and less feeling that I must have done something. Is that right? So I'm less likely to look for past causes. And I'm talking about this because A, I love that letter. And B, I hear this over and over and over again from so many people. Well, that's my karma. Or I don't know why this is happening to me. Well, you don't know why anything is happening to you, but that's not possible. In another sutra that the Buddha was talking about karma, cause and effect, he said, and it is so huge, all the circumstances, the threads that create an imbalance of phlegm in the body are so vast and complex that you would have to have a mind that transcends duality to see it. But if you're an I, you're not transcending duality because you're still subject-object, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
So what is happening to me? You're not saying, how does this arise in the universe, and asking it with the universal mind. Are you? No. So how are you going to get an answer? Everything you come to is going to be subjective, not universal. True?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the Buddha added that, I mean, I'm going to again paraphrase because I don't have that sutra in front of me. Anybody who tries to understand how something arises is going to cause their own insanity. He said you'll go mad if you try to do that. He called it one of the unskillful questions. And there were, I think, five questions that were not worthy of asking. It's more worthwhile to do some practice than to try to get the answer to these questions. One of the questions is, what happens to a Buddha when he dies? The Buddha said, don't ask. You don't have the view to... Interesting, isn't it? I'm sorry, I can't remember the other three questions, but there were five that were considered extremely unskillful. That is to say, if you asked them, you would be creating more difficulty for yourself. They're not skillful to ask.
The other one was, where does suffering come from? What's the beginning of suffering? How did stuff begin?
Something about origins, but I don't exactly remember how he phrased it. But trying to see why an action and why something is happening in the here and now, trying to understand karma was one. And one of them really surprises me. I don't remember. Maybe sometime we can talk about those five.
Mm-hmm.
They're quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What to avoid, or unless you're interested in a career in madness, what to do
this lifetime? Think about these questions and you will go mad. You will be very unhappy.
Look Okay, don't go there. I mean, I just, you know. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints so far? Yes.
I'm glad you covered this because I noticed on the way in a little dent on the back of your car. It's great. Thank you.
A little dent?
Yes.
And is there somebody parked behind me?
No, it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
A little kind of dimple dent on that. Just wonder if it's past karma.
Yeah, it was past karma. Car, karma. My car is karma.
Come on back into
not mine. My car is karma. I was giving a class one time on karma in Toronto. And then the next time I went into the class, somebody had one of those bumper stickers.
Yeah.
Pinned to the back of my chair, you know, my karma ran over my dogma. And somebody had added, and left cheetah all over the road. You know what cheetah is?
No.
mind.
Well, I'll answer.
It's a rifle.
They were a live group there.
Yeah.
And so when you're actually talking about formationings, the thing that is really, to me, most interesting about how things form is that very much like a riverbank. And this year is a good year in Alberta to talk about this, because you notice how the rivers have changed. Don't you? Big changes. They've washed totally over their banks, many of them, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
High river, huge floods. Hmm? You didn't hear about that on the news?
Yeah, I think I heard about it.
Yeah. Big erosion problems throughout Alberta. Because that's more like karma. Karma is like not just the riverbank is one solid thing and the karma is doing that to it. The flow of energy is doing that. But the flow structures the form and the form structures the flow. So when you have a desire, that desire will act upon your body and your environment in a certain way. And the action itself will change the way you think about, the way you experience your body and your environment. Like, just looking at the most simple description of karma, it's like very interdependent. You can't say, because of this, I got that. Every moment is karma. Every breath you take in is karma, and it changes your body. Doesn't it? Every exhale, every moment is karma. For a seed of karma to manifest and actually bear fruit so that you know you have done something, there are four steps that have to be complete. First, there has to be the desire. And I mean the actual, real desire. Is that clear? You have to want something. Second, there has to be sitting there and intellectually figuring out how to do it. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
Third, there has to be the action. Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
So first it has to go desire, thought, action. It's very much like seek and ye shall find, ask and it knock. Ask and it shall be received, and knock and it shall be opened unto you. It's very much like that, those three steps. It requires three steps. First, the desire, and then the actual thinking about it, figuring out where, planning, mental, and then it has to be an action, an actual physical action. And the fourth step is, it has to be successful, and you have to react to the result. For there to be not only karma, but vipaka. For it to change the riverbank. Is that clear? Classical Buddhist teaching.
Where does the surrender, like, you can have a want and go through the mental and action, but timing comes in there too, the letting go and letting it, there might be a space in time between.
It doesn't matter. Time has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Like, I get up in the morning and I'm a little tired because it took me a long time to go to sleep because I was talking on the phone until 11 o'clock at night. And it takes me a while sometimes to wind down from some phone calls. So I stayed up until 3:30 to read. And about 4 o'clock I said, okay, turn off the light. And about 5 o'clock I finally fell asleep. And at 8 o'clock I wake up, because I wake up at 8, if not earlier, 8. And I get up, and I really feel tired, and I don't want to sit. So I go and sit. And then a few days later, I should actually pay this bill because it's overdue. And oh yeah, I've got to see that person before they come and have to do that. And I don't want to sit today. So I go and sit. And then some other day, I'll be sitting and I'll be thinking, well, if I didn't sit, well, if I did a short sit, I could... And I start figuring out, you know? I start figuring out, well, maybe if I... You know? But no, I'm going to sit. Okay. So that's the desire is there, and it might come up quite often. But when I actually start planning it, if I really spend a lot of time planning it, then sometime or other I'm going to wake up, whether I'm tired or not, and whether the phone rings or not, and whether there's an unpaid bill or not, and I'm going to start... Maybe even, oh my God, housekeeping. Or water my plants, or go for a walk. And gee, you know what? I'll just not sit that day. And there'll be a certain sort of, oh well, if I don't sit, it's all right, kind of attitude toward it. Mm-hmm. You know? And then I get the results, and I say, I don't want to do that again. So then I know, okay, the result of that is this feeling of like I really... missed something. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm glad I gave myself a day off, but I don't want to do it again. Mm-hmm. So it can happen over a long period of time. Hi there, Ms. Daisy. Is that what you're asking? A lot of the time, what we think of as karma, like for example, some of us make promises that are impossible to keep. Is that true? Yeah. A few of you are nodding vigorously. So I'll assume that's true. So when you make a promise that you can't keep, what you're basically doing is you're practicing ignorance. So your karma, your action, is an action of ignorance. Because you're ignoring what is real. Because you would like it to be something else. Mm-hmm. Or you feel guilty that it isn't something else, or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. The real definition of karma is desire. It always starts with desire. So if you feel guilty because you should have done something but you didn't measure up, it isn't, and then you start, you know, sabotaging your life because you feel guilty. It isn't your karma that's happening because you broke the law. What's happening is that your karma was ignorance. You ignored the fact that you wanted to do something that you couldn't do. And so now you're getting the great good fortune of finding out you can't do it. Mm-hmm. So the result of the action is to learn what happens with that action. So your desire to do something, right? The four steps. First, desire. Second, think. You try to make it happen. Some of us, I have been very good at carrying out my ability to make something happen that I thought I should be doing or something for a very long time. Eventually, praise whatever gods may be. Third, you act on it. And then fourth, you see the result. Oh, that didn't work. Maybe I need to revise my vows. And you find all kinds of sutras like that. I mean, all kinds of... monks would go to the Buddha and say, I can't keep the 200 odd vows. And quite often he would say to them, well, can you keep 10? How about 5? How about 2? Can you keep 1? Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about establishing an ideal, it's about seeing things as they are. Isn't that nice to know? You'd watch your desires, you see how they start to stir and manifest, you watch yourself thinking about them, then you watch yourself planning them, then you watch yourself acting on them, and then you watch the result. That's a complete action and result. And from that, then you know, oh, do I want to do this again, or do I want to do it differently? And you know what? There's no age limit on this. It's never too late, even if you're in your 60s.
Or more!
Isn't that nice to know? I think it is. I'm very glad to know that myself. So, should I just read this letter again?
Sure.
I would like you to hear this letter again. I think this letter is worth reading a few times, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
This is in response to, do you know the magazine Buddha Dharma?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Thurman wrote an article about the tsunami. This is in response to his article. I sympathize with any attempts to offer consolation for the recent tsunami catastrophe. Isn't that a nice way to start this letter?
Mm-hmm.
Including Robert Thurman's piece in the latest issue of Buddha Dharma. The piece was called The Consolation of Karma in the spring 2005 issue. Personally, I doubt whether anyone coming to terms with the loss of life, family, and livelihood will be appeased by reflecting on the notion that, quote from the article by Robert Thurman, they must have done something bad in a previous life for this to happen, end quote. This might merely add guilt and depression to one's already overwhelming grief. You've already got grief. Why would you add guilt and depression? Learn how to work with grief first. Huh? Moreover, the sentiment that, quote from the article, anything bad that happens to you is a resonance of something bad that you perpetrated in a previous life, end quote, is not an accurate presentation of the Buddha's teaching on karma. Not. In the Samyutta Nikaya, the Connected Discourses, 36, verse 21, the Buddha is reported as saying, some feelings arise based on phlegm, based on internal winds, based on an imbalance of bodily humors, from the change of seasons, from uneven care of the body, from assaults, and from the result of karma. So that's one out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm going to do that next time somebody says, it's my karma. I'm going to say, oh, I think it was your internal winds. It was your phlegm. No, I think it was seasonal. That some feelings arise from the result of karma, one can know for oneself. And everyone understands that to be true. Do you get that? That if you do something and then you see the result, you know it for yourself. And everybody knows that's true. You know yourself what you have done. So any contemplatives or sages who are of the doctrine and view that whatever an individual feels, pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain, is entirely caused by what was done before, overstep what they themselves know and what is agreed on by people in general. Therefore, I say that those contemplatives and sages are wrong. From this we would understand natural disasters, getting run over or mugged, etc., as coming under the heading of assaults. However, there is no specific connection between this life disaster and past life unskillfulness. There is a general reminder that, quote, if you hadn't been born, then you wouldn't have had to experience this. Thus, there is still the incitement to liberation. Isn't that beautiful? To curtail a future birth in this danger zone. Yeah. And if that still sounds too righteous and finger-wagging, there is also the reminder that the arahant only experiences physical pain, not mental grief, which is from the Samyutta on feeling, which is another incitement to practice in the here and now rather than lament over the past. After all, look at all the people who didn't get hit by the tsunami. Don't tell me they were all innocent. It's very good, isn't it? And according to Buddha, the biggest problem we have is habitual ignorance or willful ignorance when we decide to ignore something because we're holding on to something else. That's what causes most of our suffering. Otherwise, ignorance is a power. But it's a power to be able to ignore and hold on to one thing and ignore everything else is a power that can bite you if you don't know that you're doing it and know that it's nice also to check to see whether something else works better. Is that true? You follow me or not? Hmm?
Yes.
Yeah? If you're holding on to this because you want to ignore that, you should know that you're doing that. So when the results of that action come, you know these are the results because I don't want to see that. And then you can say, well, will I let myself see it at night on a, you know, during new moon, you know, when there's a blackout, and I open the back door really quickly and then close it again? Will I let myself see it? You know, what will I allow of it? Because just not seeing it doesn't allow you to explore cause and effect. And it is cause and effect that show us the path to liberation. By the Buddha's very clear teaching, to be seen for oneself. You yourself have to see what your life is bringing you. Not look for a reason in the past, but right now, okay, this is what my life is bringing me. How do I want to work with it? Maybe, you know, maybe I get hit by a truck. Maybe, you know, I get some vile disease. Maybe, you know, my neighbor goes berserk and, you know, maims me and kills half the people on the block and everybody's crazy with grief. Maybe all those things happen. How do I want to work with it? That's desire. Right? First step of cause and effect. Desire. The desire for wholesomeness. The desire, may I be happy and may all beings be happy. Right? What is there about this I can look at that would cause any relief from the insanity? True? Well, I guess I can pray for people. They can't pray for themselves, the people that were killed. Well, I can pray for them. Right? I'm glad I can do that. I can go clean some bloody floors. I can do that. I'm glad I can do that. Does this make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying? To look for the little moment of kindness. To focus on the kindness, not on what isn't working. It's not who lies to you. It's whether or not you understand that some people lie. And if you understand that some people lie, then when somebody's lying, you can have a sense of, oh, gee, that person can't tell the truth. Gosh, that's too bad. Some sense of compassion for them. What other choices do we have? We can be caught by the lie. I had a relationship once with somebody who couldn't help lying. He lied about everything. He lied about things he didn't have to lie about. And I was just raised to be honest, you understand? In my family, we was honest. We was all honest in my family, and we didn't lie. And one time I was just remembering more things he lied about. It was so terrible. And I was thinking, and he lied about this. And he lied about this, for the 5,983rd time I've been doing this. And he lied about this. Oh, and I thought of a couple of new ones. Oh, and he lied about this. And he didn't have to, but he lied about this. I was so devastated. And I went, and I have no defense against lies. And some little wisdom being came up in the back of my head and said, now that's a lie. Sure, your defense against lies is very simple. Just don't believe somebody. Believe what they're saying is something they want you to hear. Nobody can lie to you. You can decide to be lied to. Didn't you see Being there? Peter Sellers?
Yeah.
One of the best movies in the universe, right? You should watch it again. You guys should get together and watch Being there. Huh?
There's a movie up by Bobby Darin. It's on the life of Bobby Darin. But one of the things that happens in the movies, he tries to redo his career, and he becomes a folk singer, and nobody will buy it. So he doesn't change the content, he turns it into a big-time nightclub act with the same music. And what he says was, people hear what they see.
Mm.
And it was so, I've been thinking about that in so many other instances, that people hear what they see. Like, so many instances, it's the rapping that we buy into, because we have the expectation.
Because you have an expectation. That's right. Called perception in Buddhism. If we have a passion for something, it's a perception. If we want somebody to be believable, then when they're not believable, we're hurt. But they didn't hurt us. It was us wanting them to be believable that hurt us. If somebody is not believable and I want them to be believable, that's my problem, not theirs. Their problem is that they're not believable, not that they disappointed me. I disappointed me. So So in Buddhism, they say that if you're insulted by someone or hurt by someone, it's like they throw a spear at you and it lands here. And if you're hurt by it, you're picking it up and hitting yourself. It's a very good image, isn't it? Who hurts me is me. Somebody lies to me, that's their problem. I'm sorry they have to lie to me. If I can stop them from thinking that they're getting away with their lies, that's good, because that lessens their guilt. And when somebody lies and they feel guilty about it, pretty soon they have to think everybody lies. So therefore, they can't trust what anybody says, which puts them in a really cold spot. Isn't that true? But if I actually start to pay attention and realize, you know, most people lie sometime or other. Some people lie all the time. I lie, you lie, you lie. But what is the intention? Is my intention to hurt? When somebody lies, is it their intention to hurt? Probably their intention to look, you know, to create a facade because they're afraid of who they might be seen as. Most often, people lie because they're trying to be different than they feel they are. Would you say that's true? Mm-hmm. Or there's 1,001 reasons, but they're all about suffering, aren't they? So whose action is that? My wishing that they not lie to me is my action of ignorance. And when they lie to me, I'm not hurt. I'm learning that I can't ignore the fact that sometimes people lie. Sometimes everybody lies. Everybody. True? The action is more the intention. Karma is the intention, not the act. The act is only one of four steps that are necessary to create a real flow which will bring a resultant. I thought I'd do classical Buddha Dharma tonight. I hope that interests you.
Yes.
Yes.
So how does pride come into that? Because I'm thinking of specific, one of the key factors in my being able to quit drinking when I was drinking heavily was the thought one day that I actually paid attention to and believed for a change was, well, I'm no different than anybody else. I can be a drunk. Just for, you know, because there's this fear that, well, everybody else, that's for everybody else, but not me. I'm special. Not that you think it that way, but you're always the exception.
That's right.
My world is different than the entire universe. And for a moment, it wasn't.
Right.
So you go, oh, okay, well that's one straw on that camel's back.
Right.
And little by little, a complete realization of the truth of whatever suffering it is that you're dealing with, whether it's addiction or whatever. But that was the key. And that is that pride?
I think that was just seeing things as they are, don't you?
But that feeling
when you
that I'm special,
that's called conceit in Buddhism.
Okay.
Because it's self-referencing.
Right.
Because that's what you're saying, that sense of having yourself separate.
Yeah.
Is like, that's called conceit in Buddhism, where you have a wall between you and everybody else because you're always checking how you are. You know, you're afraid of meeting other people because you're not sure how they will take you. You can't meet other people because you wonder who they are. But you're always checking on yourself. Right? That's called conceit.
But it feels like you're getting somewhere if you do that, though.
What?
Well, it feels like you're like something's happening. Something's happening. It feels... but you're doing something.
If you do which one? That's what I missed.
Being so involved with yourself.
Yeah, sometimes you can feel like that, except you notice that you get lonely. Don't you notice that you get isolated?
Sure.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying, like it is very isolating. Because
yeah.
Nobody likes spending time
yeah.
with you because
yeah.
you're never interested in them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it can be a protection from feeling that somehow I'm not likable or something. So I can start being more interested in myself than someone else. Is that what you're talking
well,
about?
I'm kind of looking at it. If people are starting to, let's say that they want to start to do Dharma, learn Dharma, and they start to work with themselves, they're really involved with themselves because they have to learn who they are,
yeah.
or how their mind works.
But that shouldn't change, that shouldn't make less your interest in other people, because if you're really interested in who you are, when you meet someone else and they perform some action that you know you do, you start getting interested in, oh, look, they're doing that same thing I do.
Yeah, not that many people do.
No?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Then maybe most of the people are doing Dharma as a cover to try to make themselves into something special.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Well, I'm the same person, like if it's me, I could be, I'm doing that too, though.
Doing what? Making yourself special with Dharma?
Well, sure.
Hmm.
It's sort of self-empowering, I would think.
Well, self-empowering is fine, but conceit is where you are always self-referring. Like, why shouldn't you be self-empowering? Because it's an incredible thing to be a human being. You know, there's a very amazing thing. Look at all the talents there are. I think our language isn't meeting, and so I'm not quite understanding you. But conceit is specifically that everything relates back to what I did. Like if I'm talking to you, and I'm doing the conceit of inferiority, no matter what you do, I'm going to suck your energy that you should take care of me. Right?
Okay, yeah.
So that's one kind of conceit. Another kind of conceit is conceit of superiority. No matter what you do, I did it better. Don't mention it to me because, you know, as soon as you're finished, I'll tell you why it was wrong because I know how it should have really happened. That's another kind of conceit. Is that what you're talking about?
I wasn't really talking I didn't even know that you were really even talking about conceit for some
yeah.
reason.
I'm talking about conceit specifically and how when you, like, in order to be a drunk, you pretty well have to be self-referencing because you can't pay attention to what's happening to people around you, can you? If one is a drunk. Or if one is a drug addict.
Uh-huh.
Can you pay attention to how your kids feel?
I see, yeah.
Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Like, I know we're all self-obsessed to some degree, but when one is really caught by conceit,
some of it is good and some of it is bad.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is unavoidable, but when it becomes the whole of your life, continuously thinking about your position, then that's painful. That's like being in jail.
Yeah.
That's like being in jail. It really is.
Yes.
Like with no view. And it's really hard to start to wonder, gee, is anybody else alive on this planet? Because everything is a reflection back on oneself. And you, when you're in that state, I have been in that state more than once. When you're in that state, you really have to practice gratitude. Not only for yourself, but for others. And it's hard to do. Because, you know, yeah, it feels shitty inside this cell, but at least nobody's bothering me or something, you know? I deserve it was mine. I deserve it. There's always a reason. But what you're not doing is you're not being part of your society. You're not sharing the gifts of your heart. Is that true? So you are suffering more than you need to, because so long as we are not as good as we are, we're punishing ourselves. Not perfect, but so long as you are not being interested in the fact that maybe somebody's lying to you. Oh, gee, maybe they need to lie. Just being interested in whether they need to lie, rather than caught in that they're lying to you. And so long as we're doing that, we're not helping them by just being open. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so long as we're not doing that, we're actually killing our own soul. When we are not, by nature, we are kind. When we lock ourselves in our own space and create walls between us and others, we are hurting ourselves. And then we collect evidence to justify it, don't we? And we're good, aren't we? Some of you have whole scrapbooks almost as big as some of my scrapbooks on that one. But it doesn't work. If you have to justify it, it's a lie. If you're holding evidence and stories, then maybe I did. Do you understand the difference? Oh, maybe I did. Heart's open. Which feels better? I can tell you which feels better. Which one do you make a habit?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you make your habit? Hmm?
One that's more pleasurable.
Yep. That's right. And then the question is, what do you have to ignore in order for that to be pleasurable? Because that's where the karma comes in, and that's where the results come from. So I'm a little coming out with both guns firing tonight, aren't I? If my mama was here, she would read my tea leaves. Oh, Cecily, gonna give him hell tonight, huh? I see you riding on one of them utes over. Look at that, I am. See, I'm on a motorcycle. See that? Can you see it?
Yeah.
Riding on a motorcycle. It looks like two meteorites are coming right for my head. Want to see? Right there. This is the motorcycle, and there's two.
Oh, yeah.
Right at the lip.
I think it's a Vespa scooter.
Can you see it?
Pretty clear.
My mother would be proud of me. She used to give me my cup after she'd read my tea leaves, and she'd say, "See, can't you? What do you see? Can't you see it there, dear?" And I'd say, "No." And she'd say, "What do you see?" And I'd say, "Tea leaves." I guess the first time I've ever actually seen them. It's a pretty good one, isn't it? The motorcycle. See, you can see it, can't you? With two meteorites headed right for me. And then you have to call my mom for that. Just a minute. Mom.
Honda has a new scooter out. It's called the Ruckus.
The Ruckus.
You're raising a ruckus.
Let me see.
Can you see it?
Well, it's a board, actually, yeah. It looks like a,
I feel my mother.
The Norwegian boat, right?
Yeah, it's very good book, I say.
It's right on the lip.
I didn't look past the motorcycle. Well, there is a boat.
It's right on the lip.
It's right at the lip.
Or right there, there's the motorcycle.
Yeah.
But there's the book on there.
Two meteorites, right? Right at the lip.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm just looking.
Yeah, well, pass it on. Pass it on to Andrea. See the motorcycle right on the lip?
Yeah.
And two meteorites headed right for my hand.
Yes.
And is there a boat, too?
At the bottom.
It's okay, never mind.
One pleasure crafts enough.
The motorcycle
is kind of clear.
Have you seen the motorcycle?
Yeah, that's quite clear.
Terry hasn't seen it yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it done seeing it, I think?
It's the first time I looked at a cup.
It missed me. I'm going to get it. Mm-hmm. I'll get it on the way back.
Yeah. First time I've ever seen tea leaves do anything in a cup.
Hopefully they stay moist.
And go for a ride with my mom, you know, and she'd say, oh, look, the clouds, dear. Look, do you see? Do you see that? And then she'd tell this whole story. I'm looking, you know. Finally, I pull over and I look. Oh, shit, you see that there, don't you? Look right there. What do you see? What do you see? I'd say, a clouds. Then Abra would come for a visit, or Heather, you know, and they'd be in the back seat, and my mom would say, oh, look, see, and they'd be going, oh, yeah, and look, it's got it. I'd go,
just keep driving.
Not my forte. But that motorcycle's there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So, do you have any questions, answers, comments, complaints about what I've talked about tonight?
I have one question. How does karma come into when somebody gets caught in a circumstance and kind of, you know, unpremeditated murder, for instance, like this happens, then boom, then all of a sudden somebody's lying dead on the ground. Do you know what I mean? They get caught.
Mm-hmm.
Because that always seemed to me as if all the circumstances were ripe. The event arose in space, and all the supporting circumstances were there, and that was the path you went.
I don't know, because I've never been in that circumstance to see that. I've been in a circumstance where I, who have a pretty good control of my temper, actually hit somebody. And I've been hit a few times. But I've never been in a circumstance where anyone died like that. I have been in circumstances where one time I was at this place, and I could see out the second floor window, and I'm looking out the second floor window, there's a lot of traffic going by outside. And I'm walking around, I was doing a walking practice. And for some reason I looked out the window, and I could see this kind of strange energy on the road. And I stopped, and I was watching it. And within 2 or 3 seconds it got quite strong. And within a half a minute, a boy got hit by a bicycle right in the center of that energy. Mm-hmm. And then the energy dissolved. Mm-hmm. So, seasons, winds, you know, and trying to understand the seeds of karma is enough to drive you mad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, don't ask. But okay. Do believe what you can see for yourself.
Right. Okay.
You don't try, you know. It's really, truly wonderful. Absolutely, profoundly superb. More fantastic than I can ever tell you that there are crop circles. Absolutely wonderful. There are days, especially when I'm doing a lot of teaching, that three or four times during the day I walk around thinking I could see a crop circle any moment. Why do I do that?
Why do you do that?
Because there's no explanation for them. Is there?
No.
I mean, all of it is either your belief or what you would like other people to believe.
Yeah.
But there's no explanation.
No. Just a bunch of theories.
Well, it's nice to be kept in your place, isn't it? I mean, don't you get arrogant sometimes?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I think quite a few of us do. Isn't it nice that there are crop circles? Oh, shoo. Release from my duties as a know-it-all. Oh, phew. And the things that bother us the most, we like to protect ourselves with an answer. Don't we?
No.
Don't do it. It's crap. Where are you going, said Ananda Bodhi, touching my arm because the man had fallen on the sidewalk. The monk, Ananda Bodhi, who never touched women, were walking along, me and him, down the road. This man walks out of a restaurant, nicely dressed suit, falls on the sidewalk. I start running toward him. He reaches over, grabs my arm. Ananda Bodhi never touched women when I met him. When he became Namjal Rinpoche, you know, you could hand him a cup of coffee and he'd say, how are you? And say, you know. But when he was an underbody, he never touched women. You had to give him his coffee on the piece of it, like, you know. He'd hold one end of it if he was really going to be nice to you. You put the cup there, and then he received it, you know. Walking down the street in Peru, and I started running toward this man who fell on the sidewalk, and Ananda Bodhi grabbed my arm. Shocked me totally. So I stopped. He said, where are you going? I said, I gotta help that man. He said, why? I said, because he needs help. He said, no. He said, you're going because you can't stand to see him. Because your own hatred of how it makes you feel. Because you hate the way it makes you feel. You're trying for an answer. Son of a bitch, you know, he was right. God, I hate that. Don't you just hate that when somebody's right about something like that, right in one of those moments? And I couldn't deny it. I mean, he's looking at me. We both know he's right. No, you're not going to help him. You're going because you hate the way it makes you feel. You're going because of anger, trying to get rid of the way you feel. Not the spaciousness of compassion. Right? And every time I tell that story, there's always somebody says, but that man needed help. Or, right? Every time. Because it's not about the man needing help. He was like in his 70s, probably been dead for years now. You know? But he's living in some people's minds very much. And it's about what is actually help. Because I feel righteous. Is that help? I think when I feel righteous for doing something good for somebody else, they actually get sicker. It's like being a vampire. I know a lot of people who are social workers, and they especially like working with drunks, and because those people don't really deserve any good help, and they're not very good, but they can help somebody who's an asshole. You know? Not because we're all a bunch of people here together.
Motivation, not the action.
It is the motivation, not the action. And most of the time we like that intellectually. But in the actual movement, how hard that is. Because the honesty it requires to see your own motive and be kind to yourself. See your own motive and be kind to yourself. Let yourself have your motive without having to act on it. If there is something in you that is screamingly jealous, why not hold that like a jealous child and just let yourself feel it? Why cover it up, or, you know? Otherwise, every time you meet somebody who's jealous, you're going to be trying to discipline them, aren't you? Because they're going to vibrate the jealousy in you that you can't deal with. Is that true? Whenever you don't like somebody, it's because they're doing something that stimulates a part of yourself you don't like. That's a bugger, isn't it? What you have to become if you're a Buddhist eventually is a lover. You know? If all beings are destined to awaken, that means you have to sit down in front of your shrine and have all kinds of cushions there for all the other parts of you that you'd rather leave in the other room. Invite them all the losers and all the winners and all the middle class, and, you know? You and all of them. All the little aspects of yourself, they all are awakening. All together. The entire world awakens together. Otherwise, you have that dilemma of the Bodhisattva. You know the dilemma of the Bodhisattva, don't you? My friend Susan Sample, she phoned me one day and she said, I was just thinking about the Bodhisattva vow. She said, and then after everybody else is awakened, then what happens? Because you're going to have all these Bodhisattvas standing there holding the door for each other saying, oh no, after you. Oh no, after you. Oh no, after you. Oh no, after you. So what's going to happen then, huh, Sus? Oh, after you, I said, Susan. I vow not to awaken it after you. That's good, isn't it?
That's why we're still asleep.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Well, the idea that in terms of lying, somebody lying to you and not allowing that lie to hurt you, is that...
Not being hurt by their lie. It's why you want them not to be lying. But if they are lying, they are lying. You know? So then you have to look at them and say, okay, they're lying. What is a compassionate way for me to work with this?
Rather than internalize the lie.
Rather than, you know, like lying to somebody. When somebody lies to me, what have they actually done? Has they broken my arm?
Well, suppose to say to you,
have they broken my arm? Have they broken my arm?
No.
Have they taken away my life savings so I'm going to be on the street forever and ever?
Well, suppose, well...
No.
No.
No, I would have to act on a lie before that to happen. If somebody just lies to me.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened is that they have somehow acted differently than I wanted them to.
Mm-hmm.
But is their life supposed to be acting how I want them to?
No. Well, you'd like them to.
Yes.
I would like them to, but if they don't, they don't. And they're the ones who have to live with that, not me.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel sadness because somebody lies. Because
mm-hmm.
I was hoping they wouldn't, or I'm shocked that they are, or something. But to think I have no defense against that is bullshit. My defense is very straightforward. You believe that people are telling you what they're telling you. I believe that people are telling me what they tell me. I absolutely believe that what you tell me is what you're telling me. And there's something that you're telling me that is important for you to tell me. And so I listen with my full heart.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I am truly hearing you. Because when you're listening to somebody, you hear when they're not telling the truth, as well as when they're telling the truth. You can hear that. And if someone wants to lie to me, maybe it's a good idea for me to let them lie.
But, well, maybe, what if a person didn't, like, they were just saying something and...
It's not an issue, is it?
Okay.
If they got a habit of that, you know, if I feel like playing games with them, I'll probably play with them. I'll probably tell them some equal one. It's sort of like... And then make it obvious that it's a lie 2 seconds later and go... or something, you know. I'll probably, you know, if it's just sort of them just... like making a slip, like making a bad pun without meaning to or something.
Yeah.
I'll probably groan or, you know, I'll probably do something because, you know, I have such a... sick sense of humor. I wouldn't pass up an opportunity like that, but but it, you know, it's not an issue. I mean, it's not an issue about, the issue is not that someone else can actually cause me harm by lying to me. The issue is that if I expect someone to not lie to me and they lie to me, then I have learned that they can't always tell the truth. I can be hurt. But it's very simple. It's now actually, like, quite often I'm hurt by life. Oh, geez, I thought that curb was 2 steps over there. Ouch. By the same token, now I know. Watch when you're walking here, because the curb is further than you, closer than you think. I would like to know that. To be seen for oneself. Isn't that true? And if something is really important, you don't believe the first verse. You know, if you're going to get, you know, somebody to redo a bathroom or something in your house, you wouldn't take the first person that arrived because they could start the next day and they gave you the lowest price and said you didn't need a building permit, would you? Wouldn't you go, well, now let me see, electrical, plumbing? You got the lowest. Can I just check on your credentials and get back to you? Wouldn't you want to say that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I've done 3 like this last week. Right? So if somebody like that lies to you, and that doesn't hurt you, what's your problem? You know that person is lying for some reason. He's trying to, you know, scam you or whatever. But you don't have to be scammed. You're intelligent. Oh, that person's lying. Period. Okay. By the way, I've decided to hire somebody else. Is that straightforward? You have choices here. It's your heart. How do you want to grow it? It's, as the Buddha said, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. It's your reaction to things. It's not what comes to you. It's your reaction to things that causes the difficulty. I love that one. It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. He was talking to a Brahmin about what you should or shouldn't eat, right? This Brahmin had the views about what you should or shouldn't eat. And the Buddha said, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. That's just very nice.
Is that karma too? It's not,
yeah.
Not the not.
It's not what's
not
happening.
What actually happens to you,
but
your reaction to it. That's
yeah.
Good.
But the yeah. But the it's the motive. It is the motive. It
yeah.
is the motive that creates. The flow of the river changes the bank, and the bank changes the flow of the river,
and they're basically pretty well inseparable.
So karma is not that you fell and broke your arm, it's how you dealt with having your arm broken?
Probably. Your action is, oh, gee, it was okay a minute ago. That's your action, isn't it? Oh God, who's going to pick up the kids at daycare? That's your reaction, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's how the next step will go. But you know that this body is impermanent. You do know that, don't you? on your bad days. I know it on my bad days. So it's not about the arm in one way. It's about the shock of what you thought of as yourself is not unbreachable. And that's more what we're talking about. We're talking about holding on to a sense of a self when actually that self is changing all the time. But you need a strong ego structure to let the self change and acknowledge it's changing. Acknowledge that last week I had these views and next week I might have other views. Okay. When I was two, when I grew up, people asked me when I was three what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I used to say a daddy. When I was six, I wanted to be a mummy. When I was eight, I wanted to be a magician. Houdini was my hero. When I was 12, I wanted to be a school teacher. When I was 14, I wanted to be a cowgirl. Interesting, huh? How about you, when you actually look at it? How many selves are you in one day, let alone over your life? What is it that you're clinging to? Clinging to the river? Good luck. That ignorance will come back and let you know. Won't it? Mm-hmm. But to have the adventure of finding out who you are every day. Okay, what do I wish to perform? How do I wish to act today? Having an aspiration for the day. May I practice gratitude today? May I practice humor today? May I practice interest in the color yellow today? You know, go through the colors. Mm-hmm. May I be interested in green today? In purple today? Maybe photography. May I get a camera and pretend I'm taking pictures all day? Digital cameras are great for that. Then you can just... Right? Any last questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
I don't believe Don saw the motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Terry's trying to take it. He's a hog fan.
What did you say? Lying is hiding.
You bet.
Pardon?
Lying is often there's something being hidden. The secrets that sort of lead to that line.
Yeah. It's like creating a separateness between yourself and the world. I mean, that's what I did when I lie. And I do when I lie, create a separateness. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I was giving a class in Toronto. You were there, Andrea. I was giving this class in Toronto, and I was talking about something that was really terribly wonderful class. I was giving a really terribly wonderful class on Dharma in Toronto, terribly terrible, Spadina there. And then I realized I could make it just a little more interesting if I just exaggerated a little bit. So I just exaggerated a little bit, and then like three sentences later, I lost my voice. Mm-hmm.
And everybody's rushing around, oh, should we get you a drink of water? I'm like, no, it's okay. I can't tell you how happy I am this.
My life, Dad.
I'll let you know later. Because I was consciously choosing to lie. And I was talking Dharma, and there's like this two things fighting in me, you know?
Wow.
I don't know if you remember that.
Do you remember that?
And I was like,
no.
Oh, you don't remember?
She didn't know you.
No, everybody, I told them as soon as my, it took like maybe about 3 minutes, and my voice came back, and I said, it's because I just told a lie.
If somebody's lying to me, is it always just their thing, or is it conceited to go? Is there something I'm doing that's making it seem like they have to lie to me?
Well, maybe, you know. But like I'm saying, the laws of karma are very, very complex. It isn't just you. It's the river and the riverbank. It's very complex. So it's not you and it's not them. It's in this circumstance, dishonesty is arising. What do I want to do with it? Don't think me and them, because it's not me and them.
So it's more simple to see.
It's more simple to decide how you want to react to a lie than whose fault it is.
Hmm.
Which lifetime? Which mother? Which father? I'm somebody that they can't tell the truth to because, let me see, in Egypt when I was a slave girl, or my father was sold me, and they were, you know, like, how are you going to figure out why? You
no,
understand?
I mean, like, if I think of a parent is fibbing to me about how much they're practicing, I'll think, well, maybe, am I asking too much? Are they too...
But then why don't you just ask them? You know, why are you trying to figure it out? Why aren't you honest with them? Do you think I'm asking too much of you? Why don't you just ask them, just with openness? Why try to figure it out? You don't have to figure it out, just ask them.
It's always just theirs?
No, that's just yours, to be honest with them. You're somebody is telling you how much they're practicing, right?
Yeah.
And you don't believe them. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And so what do you do with that? You ask them. Otherwise you're lying to them.
Well, I do. But I'll...
You're saying... But you ask them, do you think I'm giving you, asking you for too much practice, asking you to practice too much?
Yeah.
Is that what you ask them?
Yeah.
That is?
Generally.
How do you say it? How do you say it?
Depends on how they said it.
So they say, oh man, I just practiced so hard. And then you say what?
I'll say really.
Yeah, but that's not the same.
I'll say when?
No, that's not the same. You're not saying, do you think I expect too much practicing time from you? You actually ask them about the time. So that you're actually talking to them about the actual issue, not trying to be charming around it. So that they can say, yeah, I do. Or, oh no, I don't. So you can say, well, when do you practice and how many hours? You know, because then you've already brought up time and you're actually, they have said yes or no. And so then you can actually discuss what you're really asking. I think you're probably trying to be, what is the word? What's the word? Come on, you guys, help me. Have you all been sitting here watching me bumble through this conversation? I'm tired. Can you help me here?
Dogmatic.
No. She's not being... You're dogmatic, not her.
You know, when you're being careful, trying to...
Precise?
Too diplomatic, thank you. Too diplomatic. See what I mean? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a manipulative diplomacy going on here.
Mm-hmm.
No, not really. Now what? Now what?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know that for myself, when this is bringing up for me, because you use the words ignorance, right? When I'm trying to cling on to something that I can't have, I'm in a state of ignorance. And I like that. It's very simple terminology for a whole bunch of words I've used trying to describe it. And so when I'm scared to be honest and direct,
that's right,
I keep myself in a state of ignorance.
You ignore the truth because you choose this.
Yeah. And that just so fits.
It's so beautiful, isn't it? The power of ignorance. If you actually look at the power of ignorance, it's a great power.
Yeah. And I thought, because I wanted to be a nice person, that state of ignorance was being nice and kind to people, and I wasn't making them suffer more. And somebody had said something just recently to me, because I was concerned about somebody suffering, and they had said, leave them their gifts. That's
beautiful.
That's their gift.
That's beautiful.
Right. And then it made sense to me that I had been keeping myself in this state of ignorance, right, and not allowing them
their gifts
to even see their gifts.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to control so much, and and so I like the word ignorance is good. It's quick, it's easy, and really
visceral.
It works.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So, my last word. Overcome the bitterness in your heart because you're not up to the magnitude of the pain that has been entrusted to you. You never will be up to it. I will never be up to it. There is dissatisfactoriness. There is no ideal. Overcome the bitterness in your heart because you are not up to the magnitude of the pain that has been entrusted to you. If you go overcome the bitterness, then the road to faith opens. If you don't overcome the bitterness, then you're still trying to make it you who's doing. You notice this beautiful gold light in your hearts. Through your body. Fills this room. Moves out through the whole city of Edmonton. Anyone you want to pray for, just imagine them washed by the light. Moves through the whole world. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, it's just temporarily assuaged. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings when there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings when there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings when there is less suffering. So thank you for your great compassion.
Good motorcycle.